I'm so excited to be able to share with you guys an interview about writing in science with Susan Wise Bauer and Susanna Jarrett from The Well-Trained Mind. This interview is packed with tips about writing in science that you do not want to miss. Hi, I'm Paige Hudson from the Tips for Homeschool Science Show, where we're breaking down the lofty ideals of teaching science into building blocks you can use in your homeschool. All right, today I'm so excited to have with me Susan Wise Bauer and Susanna Jarrett on the Tips for Homeschool Science Show. Together, they host the Well-Trained Mind podcast, which looks at homeschooling and classical education. Both of them were homeschooled, and Susan is one of the leading experts in home education. She's authored some of my favorite homeschooling books, like The Well-Trained Mind, A Guide to Classical Education at Home, Writing with Ease, and the Story of the World series. Please help me welcome Susanna and Susan to the podcast.
We're so happy to be here.
Yes, thanks for having us.
We are happy to have you here. So let's dig right into writing in science. Do you think we should write everything down that we do for science?
Ooh, everything is a very big word, Paige.
Yeah.
So obviously to that big question, the answer is, first of all, no. And then second, the amount of writing that you do is really going to depend on the age student that you're working with. I say this a lot, but I think it's so important that I will say it again. Particularly in grades 1 through 3, students have a limited amount of fine muscle power, you know, mm-hmm. in their little hands. And they have so much to do in the actual language arts areas, the spelling and the grammar and the writing, that we have to be super, super careful how much physical writing we ask them to do in other subjects. I am always pointing out to people how much, for example, handwriting is involved in doing like a first grade math worksheet. Mm-hmm. You use up all that hand power on the math worksheet. There's none left when it gets to actual writing practice. So no, you should not write everything down for science. That doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about everything, because there's a difference between processing information in language and then actually writing it down.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about what you're learning. You ask them to tell you about what they're learning in complete sentences, but you're very careful about how much actual physical writing you then assign to them in their science work. Does that help answer the question?
Yeah. And, you know, you said that, I think, years ago mm-hmm. in one of the lectures you did. I think it was at Virginia Homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. And that's what saved my daughter from writing in science, because I had pushed her to write way too much in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And she started to hate science because of it. Mm-hmm. And then when I heard your talk, I was like, okay, maybe we need to like ease up here. Because it is difficult for the little guys to write.
And what starts to happen, I'm so glad you brought that up, Paige, because they start to associate the pain in their hand with the subject. So they'll say, yeah. Well, I hate math and I hate science. Mm. But what they're really saying is, I'm working too hard here and I'm not ready for it.
Right. And that was such a light bulb moment for me in our homeschool, and just kind of, you know, learning that push and pull with the kids and where to push them and where to kind of ease back and let them just enjoy what we're learning and talk about it, but not necessarily write everything down.
Absolutely. So. Incomplete sentences. Always talk in complete sentences.
I wasn't so good at making them do that, but I'm getting better.
Getting better. Well, you know, it's funny. We go through, especially if you've got more than one small child, you can go through a whole day and never say a full sentence. You know, you're just like, no, stop, sit, go, eat, you know. And certainly sooner or later, you have to stop and think, okay, I need to be producing a complete subject and a complete predicate so this kid understands how language works.
Yeah, that is true. So what are your top 3 tips for notebooking or narration in science?
Ooh, Susanna, do you want to start with your top tip? And then I'll add what I think is important.
Sure. So let's see here. When you're notebooking and doing narration in science, I think one thing that connects already to what we were just talking about is that you can take those narrations and use them as their writing practice for that day. It doesn't have to be a whole separate subject. And what that does, it helps children create those connections between subjects. I think it's really easy for kids to kind of silo subjects. Okay, at 9 o'clock we do math, at 10 mm-hmm. o'clock we do science. Mm-hmm. And when you use writing across the curriculum and you use the narration, maybe they're reading a book and then you ask them, you know, what's the most interesting thing that they learned from that book? And then you have them explain that to you in a full sentence and then write it down. And then depending on their age, either speak it back to them and they write it down, or if they're younger, write it out for them and they copy it over. They're getting that writing practice in and they're learning. And you can even make this very explicit for them. We're going to use what we're learning in writing to write down our observation in science. And that's what scientists do. And so being mm-hmm. very explicit and making those connections between subjects is really helpful for kids so that they don't get stuck in that trap of siloing. Oh, well, I did this in science class, but it doesn't really connect to what I do in writing class. And one quick anecdote I'll give to that is that I'm thinking about this. It's top of mind right now because I just had coffee with a friend of mine who's a fifth grade teacher. And she is an ELA, a writing and reading teacher. And so she did a whole unit, I think it was 4 weeks, maybe more, on rainforest. So they read nonfiction about rainforest. They did nonfiction writing projects on rainforests in their ELA class. And near the end of that quarter, the fifth graders went to science class and the teacher there said, "Hey, we're going to start this new unit on ecosystems and climates. What do you all know about rainforests?" And the kids were silent. Oh, and so, of course, the ELA teacher who had just been teaching them about rainforests for over 4 weeks was frustrated and asked them, "Hey, why didn't you say anything about rainforests in science class?" And they said, "Well, we learned about rainforests in English class." And it did not connect that something in English class, which is where you study stories and books and things that aren't real, would be the same as the rainforest in science class. So everywhere we can make explicit connections by incorporating writing into our science time, I think is really helpful for younger children.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Oh my goodness, the ability for children to not see connections is amazing sometimes.
It was very frustrating for this teacher.
I'm sure. And it's partly a maturity issue too. So I really like what you say there, Susanna, that if you consistently use the narration that you're doing in history or in science for your writing over time, that is going to help them sort of break down those artificial walls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have two more tips. Here would be the two that I would add. First thing is they don't have to remember everything. One thing. Do they remember one thing? One thing is good. If you do one thing every lesson, they're going to actually accumulate a lot of information. But I think it's easy for parents to sort of get hung up on, let's make sure that you learn everything that you possibly can out of this lesson. One thing is fine. And then I think my third tip would be don't forget that they can draw a picture and write a caption. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be an actual like sentence narration. Pictures and captions are good too. That also fixes information in their minds and it also gives them that fine motor practice with their hands.
Yeah, that's one of the wonderful things I think about homeschooling is that we can use, you know, information and skills across the curricula and we can kind of tie things in and that we can go back, especially in classical education, that we can go back and hit the things again. So we can kind of relax during the first few elementary years and then knowing we'll hit all those skills again or all that information. So what should we do when our kids give us blank stares? The dreaded homeschool mom's blank stare when they ask, "What did you learn?"
Right.
Susanna, you want to go first?
Yeah,
here?
I'll give it a go and then you can add anything you have. Sure. I think there's one thing you can try first and then kind of a second step after that. The first step would be just rephrasing the question. So if you said, "Can you tell me two things that you learned about X?" You could just rephrase it to, you know, "What's the most interesting thing you learned about X today?" Rephrasing that question. If they're still struggling with those open-ended questions, sometimes you need to step back and actually create more closed-ended questions for them. So if you were doing if you're observing a specimen or reading about a particular animal, you can ask very specific closed-ended questions, reminding them that they can go back to the text and we can look at something again, like, does this have wings? What do those wings look like? What do those wings feel like if you're observing the specimen? So moving from open-ended questions to closed-ended questions to kind of open up, you know, just open up their brains and kind of get them juicing and comfortable before you move back to, well, what's the most interesting thing that you learned?
Yeah, I agree, Susanna. And I think that particular way of phrasing the question where you say, what do you remember, is almost designed to produce a blank stare. I mean, I don't know if you guys, as an adult, I've had this experience. I did an interview once. And I was kind of thrown off my game because they called at a different time when I was supposed to do an interview. And I was actually out at the barn with the vet and a sick sheep. And I was like, okay, I'll talk to you, but my attention's going to be really, you know, because I've got the sick sheep and the vet. And the first thing they said was, so who is your favorite poet? And do you know what? I could not, for the life of me, think of a single name of a single poet. I just totally blank. So, you know, those super open-ended questions sometimes just have that effect on our brains. It's not the kid's fault. You know, if they really can't remember anything, then you have to sort of go sentence by sentence. Read them a sentence, you know. The sun is a massive incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. What is the sun? And they look at you blankly and you say, is it a massive incandescent gas? And they say, uh-huh. And you say, so why don't you say that after me? The sun is a massive incandescent gas. Sorry, that was one of my kids' favorite songs. So it immediately popped to mind. But sometimes you have to do that for a long time so that they figure out how to answer a question. It's not a natural skill for a lot of kids that needs to be modeled for them. And it's fine for you to say the answer and have them repeat it after you. The information is still going through their brain and out their mouth, which is what you're aiming for.
Yeah. We used to have to break it up into short paragraphs to get my kids to narrate and stop the blank stares.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But it is a skill that they learn and they do get better at it the more you practice. With that in mind, how do our expectations for writing and science change over the years?
Well, we talked about this a little already. If we're looking at the different stages of a classical education, like grammar, logic, and rhetoric, or roughly elementary, middle, and high school, in the grammar stage, you're looking at not too much writing. Less can be more, you know, short narrations and dictations. And then moving on into the logic stage, that's when students are learning and it's more natural for them to make connections between subjects, to make connections even between branches of the sciences. And so their writing is going to reflect that, and they maybe be doing more outlining and ways for them to kind of think logically through these connections that they're building. And then in the rhetoric stage or the high school years, that's when they can really, they have the basis and the analytical thinking skills to really engage with the conversation of science and read the writings of great scientists and be able to think about them and write about them and respond to them with short response papers. So the amount of writing that they're doing over time is growing, but also the type of writing from just, this is what I learned today, to, whoa, this is how that connects to this, to, oh, wow, this is, you know, what this, you know, historic scientist thought about science and this was their theory and what's my response to that?
I think it's really easy. These are all great points that Susanna's making. I just would like, well, I'd add two things. First, don't forget about lab reports. By high school, they should have some practice writing lab reports, which is something that doesn't make it into a lot of science study.
Right.
But it's an important way to document what they're learning. And also, it's a really great skill for them to have before they go off to college because they are going to have to take an intro science class. And that's a really necessary skill. But I think also just be aware that, you know, classical education, we always talk about it being rigorous. And rigor is great, but it's so easy to ask for too much too soon. And just remember that you got 12 years to get this kid up to doing real science writing, and particularly for oldest children with literate moms, the demand for them to do too much writing too soon is it's just ever present. It's always there because you're trying so hard to do a good job, but it's easy to, you know, shoot yourself in the foot by producing loathing rather than love of the subject.
Susan, what do you wish all homeschoolers knew about writing and science?
Well, I think mostly that writing is a part of science because writing is a way of processing information. Writing is not writing. Writing is a way that we take in and shape and claim information in every
single subject area. I mean, mm-hmm. if I could, and we talk about this some in The Well-Trained Mind, I would get rid of writing as a subject, particularly in the elementary years, because as long as you're doing your copy work and your narration and your dictation, you're writing. And mm-hmm. and I know back to this story that Susanna was telling about sort of siloing information. Kids silo information, and you get to science, and they're like, well, why do we have to write? We already did writing. So, mm-hmm. you know, the more that you can, the more that you can make writing a way of learning across the curriculum, the better the learning in every subject is going to be.
Yeah. And that's what we say with the three keys of science. You need to do science, you need to read, and you need to write it down mm-hmm. because they make that connection with science. So, Susanna, from the student's perspective, what do you wish homeschooling parents knew about writing and science?
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind might be a little controversial, but I'm going to go there anyway. and this is that I've noticed that in new curricula, this might be more in public schools right now, but I think these trends tend to eventually permeate across school types. Mm-hmm. There's a trend to try to make everything relevant to kids by connecting it to current events and then asking kids to find solutions to the world's problems. So some real examples of projects from when I taught public school, these were elementary and middle school projects. Host a community forum to convince local community members to make healthier food choices like eating organic. Write an essay about the most effective policy solutions for reducing single-use plastics. Or learn about how being an ethical consumer could help save the rainforest and then write an email to convince your parents or administrators things that they could apply to help impact the rainforests.
I don't mean to be politically incorrect, but that just sounds so boring.
Yeah,
right.
And me too.
This is all designed to sort of engage kids with word doing activism and we're going to change the world. But I think this does a disservice to kids for two reasons. First, at this age, kids don't typically have enough background knowledge or even analytical skills to do justice to these types of opinion pieces. So it almost mm-hmm. cheapens the act of having an opinion because we're teaching them that they can have opinions and try to go make change without a thorough study and analysis of the topic. Mm-hmm. And then second, even if you do spend a whole quarter teaching kids about rainforests before doing an advocacy project, it's still somewhat developmentally inappropriate because your child unless your child is naturally, you know, in third grade and saying, I want to go save the rainforests. If in second grade, they do a project to try to end the use of plastic and third grade, they try to save the rainforest and fourth grade, they try to, you know, save the whales. And then they check back in with you and they're like, Mom, you know, how are the whales doing? How's the rainforest doing? It could actually become discouraging and disheartening for them when at this stage, they should be building their sense of agency, building the sense that their attitude and their actions can impact their little world around them, their siblings and their friends. And so I think it can be unintentionally harmful. You know, we're really trying to build people who care about the world and make the world a better place, but it can unintentionally impact their sense of agency over time. And so I think we just have to lean in and believe and trust that kids are naturally curious mm-hmm. to learn about the world, especially in the grammar stage or elementary years. We don't need this bent of advocacy to make it engaging. We can just learn about it. And that's okay mm-hmm. at this age. And even as they get a little bit older, requiring advocacy means that you're artificially manufacturing a passion for them versus allowing them and equipping them to pursue what is interesting to them. So I'm not going to say, you know, if your fourth grader wants to go save the rainforest, great, support them. But I would definitely steer clear of assignments that kind of give kids the pretense that these assignments themselves are going to create change because these assignments are for them to learn. And, you know, anyway, that's just a trend that I've noticed that I wanted to comment on that because I think it can harm kids in the long run.
Susanna, that's such a great point. And we have, you know, part mm-hmm. of classical education, part of the whole mindset of classical education is that knowledge is good. It's just mm-hmm. good. You know, it's good mm-hmm. to know more. We don't always have to find a practical reason for knowing more. It's okay to just know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. So tell us more about the Well-Trained Mind Press and how you guys can help us with teaching writing.
Awesome. So definitely check out the well-trainedmind.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a writing curriculum called the Complete Writer, which is a guide that allows parents to build a writing curriculum using the curricula that they're already using. So incorporating writing into science, into history, which is a lot of what we talked about today. That book has a lot of great ideas for that, including using writing in science. And also The Well-Trained Mind, the book that you mentioned earlier, has ideas for incorporating writing into science as well. So those two, The Complete Writer and The Well-Trained Mind, would be my top recommendations from our website to look into.
So where can people find you guys online other than The Well-Trained Mind website?
Well, that's definitely, you know, sort of our portal to our message boards and articles and all sorts of things. But if you want to, my author website is SusanWeisbauer.com. Not very tricky to remember. And of course, you can always follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you guys sharing your wisdom about writing and science and, you know, taking that time to build that strong foundation for our kids and help them to just really appreciate the world around them and learn about the wonders of science without the pressure of writing. So thanks for coming on today, and I'm 100% sure that the Tips for Homeschool Science listeners are going to love this episode.
Thank you, Paige.
Thanks for having us.
Did you know that all the programs at Elemental Science use notebooking? And many of these have both a lap book and a notebooking page option. If you're looking for a science unit that has both a lap book and a notebook, you'll want to check out our Science Chunks series. This series puts you in charge of your science studies for the year. You can pick and choose the units you want to study and the ones that interest you and your student. Plus, with two levels of reading and writing, you can incorporate the whole family. Visit elementalscience.com to learn more.